This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Your number is 877-217-5757 and email talk@talklouisiana.org. Reverend Chris Andrews is with us for more than 20 years. He was the pastor at First United Methodist Church in downtown Baton Rouge. He's now head of Jubilee Pioneers. He's still a man of the cloth and also the executive director of Rebuilding Together Baton Rouge. And Chris Andrews often goes to places in our city that most of us do not on a regular basis, and some never at all. And Chris Andrews, how is it in our city right now?
Well, Jim, good morning and Happy New Year to you and your listeners. You know, we have our challenges, as I think all of us know, in Baton Rouge. And I spend my days mostly in North Baton Rouge dealing with issues of substandard housing for elderly people. And some of the neighborhoods there are absolutely pitiful, to be honest with you, just pitiful. We have a vision in our organization, Rebuilding Together Baton Rouge, that we're going to work in 2019 and forward to transform the zip code of 70805. We'd like that to become a quality life place in Baton Rouge and take away all of the problems that are there and the fear, the anger, the crime, make it a garden spot. And that's our strategy for 2019 and forward.
Well, you're a white guy who actually goes north of Florida Boulevard.
I do. And, you know, I've been doing this for several years, and I have never had a negative incident in North Baton Rouge.
And I bet you don't carry a weapon either.
I do not carry a weapon, and just couldn't imagine doing that. I think that's about the most foolish thing anybody could ever do.
But a lot of people do carry weapons, and we have a lot of carnage on our streets.
We do, and it's always tragic when life is wantonly wasted. And, you know, I think that maybe I'm a dope stuck on hope, but I believe that if we treat each other with respect, look at each other as images of God, let love rule our lives, we'll be all right.
You speak as a man who has seen a lot in your life, and you've been in this community a very long time. And as we look ahead to 2019, there is the prospect that we will have the Village of St. George. Your thoughts?
Well, I actually live in that area of the city, and I'm distressed by it, to be honest with you. I don't think it's a good idea to create a new city of St. George for the reasons that have been stated for that city, for the people who are proponents of it. I think it's a balkanization of our community, and we ought to really pull together, work on the problems that affect us all for solutions that are good for all. And withdrawing, pulling out, creating a new city, trying to create a little bastion of goodness while the rest of the city goes in another direction just isn't a wise strategy, in my opinion.
What do you think the motivation is?
Actually, I think it's probably the motivation that we all have for life. People want quality education for their families. They want you know, safety in their neighborhoods. They want services delivered in a timely and effective way. We all want that, but the question is, what's the best way to achieve those ends? And I don't think it's good for people who have the wherewithal to sort of take their marbles, go over to their corner, and live the good life while other people struggle. We're all in this together.
Mm-hmm. Well, our previous guest was Roy Fletcher. He is a Republican, but at times, even with his right-wing leanings, he has represented Democrats. We mentioned that Warren Beatty was a pallbearer at John McCain's funeral. And you were a left-of-center preacher at a conservative church for more than two decades. That had to be interesting.
It was interesting at different times, more interesting than others. Yes, somehow I pulled it off. I got away with it. I know that there were days that some people wanted to bite my head off and could chew a nail at some of the things that I said. But, you know, I'd always tried to demonstrate that I cared about people and that if they were hurting, I would try to be there as their pastor. That carries you a long way in this world. And when people know that you're genuinely motivated for the best reasons, I think that they kind of cut you a little slack and give you a little tolerance.
How much of the division is on is along racial lines, though. Is that something that is still permeating in this community and others?
It is deep, and it is real, and how we address that is of critical importance. We need somehow to come together and erase this racial divide that is, I think, it permeates everything that we do. You just listen to people talk about how they speak about other people of other races, and they can do it in a lighthearted way, they can do it in a mean-spirited way. But every time we speak in a way that puts down another person, discounts them, makes them somehow less than us, we are adding to that divide, and that goes on all the time.
Some people believe, though, it's better not to even talk about it. The last, in fact, I remember some liberals saying, though, when President Obama was delving into this subject, the last thing we need to do is to talk about it because that just gets people revved up, perhaps not in a good way.
It does get them revved up, but it's also the elephant in the room, and you just cannot ignore what is a glaring problem in our city and I think in our nation. We've never really been able to cross that divide and bring the races together. I mean, it just hasn't happened.
I'll give you an example of people who, in a case involving yours truly, didn't want me to delve into that area. Every year, the last few years, in Tiger Rag, of which I am the president, I print the number of LSU football players, the number of black players, the number of white players. And this year, I think there were 84 blacks and 15 whites. And then I print the number of Golden Girls and the number of blacks and whites. There are 24 whites and 0 blacks. And I had no editorial comment, just printed numbers. And yet, I got more letters about that than anything else I wrote all year.
Yeah. Negative, I'm sure.
Oh, yes.
Very. Yeah. Yeah. We have got some blinders on when it comes to race in this country and in this city. And I don't know any way to address it but to talk about it and to bring it out under the cover, bring it into the light of day, and let's be honest with each other and let's see what we can do to come together.
Well, it's easier said than done, and
indeed,
we've been talking about this for a long time, and we have made some progress. I think you and I are old enough to remember when we lived in a segregated society and people couldn't even eat at the same lunch counter. But that's changed, and that's good. But we have a long way to go.
We have a long way to go. We really do. And, you know, it's frustrating because I spent a great deal of my adult life trying to address that issue. My awakening to the disparity between the races happened in Opelousas, where I grew up. I may have shared this story with you before. Two men came to a lunch counter where I happened to be sitting drinking a Coke one day. I was about 15 years old, and they sat down, and in a few moments, someone walked over and spoke to them. They got up, and they walked away. They were in Army uniforms. They were officers in the United States Army, but they were African American. And in my town of Opelousas in the 60s, they couldn't get a meal because of the color of their skin. And something went off in me that day. I've never been the same. It was nobody said anything. There was no ruckus. It was a very quiet thing, but I saw it, and it changed me.
That's evident.
Yeah.
It changed you in so many ways, I would imagine.
Really, it did. And, you know, it was a Damascus Road experience for me. And since that time, you know, I've tried to look at people in a way that sees everybody as a child of God, every face an image of God. That's one of my most basic places I go to again and again in the course of the day. When somebody does something that irritates me in traffic, acts in a way that I don't think is very becoming or offends me, I try to say, image of God. Gotta love him.
You're exceptional. I use a few choice words occasionally when I'm cut off in traffic.
I have been known to do that, too. I have to be honest about it. But it's also something that I try to tone down.
877-217-5757 to talk with the Reverend Chris Andrews, Patrick in Ennis-Wald Estates. Hi, Patrick. Good morning to you.
Hey, you guys are, I guess, kind of talking about the ideal of a colorblind society. I guess my question is, do you think maybe in the future they'll merge Southern and LSU. I mean, there's no need for two different universities anymore. I could, you know, at one time, I guess they had Southern because we had a college for black people and we had a college for white people in LSU. But nowadays, we don't need two colleges in the same city. I think they should merge them into, you know, maybe make Southern part of LSU and merge it all as one university. Why do we have two separate universities in 2018?
Or make LSU part of Southern. How about Louisiana Southern University, LSU?
Yeah, that's the issue. I mean, I think Southern has historically served a very, very good and noble purpose. And it would want to preserve its heritage and its integrity.
Well, and I remember Mike Martin, when he was chancellor at LSU, noted correctly that this is the only city in the country that has two land-grant universities in the same city, and I think there's room for both. But LSU will not even play Southern in football. They play all these other schools, played Nicholls State, for goodness sakes, played McNeese. They play them all, but they don't. They played Southeastern this year, but they don't play Southern University.
That's Florida Boulevard.
I think, you know, Memorial Stadium holds 21,000 people. Let's have LSU and Southern play there in a football game, neutral site, and charge $1,000 a ticket, and it will be filled. And then the gate would be more than it is at Tiger Stadium.
Could be the Baton Rouge Bowl.
I love it. I love it. People say, well, you're just inviting trouble by doing something like that. I have a feeling that good things would happen.
I do, too. I think when you get people together, you know, and something of a neutral ground and just let them have a good time, you begin to see what people are about, a lot of that acrimony melts away, and you just you come away with a different perspective.
And Memorial Stadium has a long history. It was the site of the last college football game of Terry Bradshaw.
Grandland Rice.
Grandland Rice Bowl.
That's right.
Five interceptions as Louisiana Tech lost.
I was in school with Terry.
We'll talk more after this timeout with Chris Andrews. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana, your number for Reverend Chris Andrews, who will close out the week for us. And it'll be the final show this year that I'll do. Julie Baxter Payer will be here Monday, so she'll be doing fine work as always. 877-217-5757 is your number. Chris Andrews, when we went to the break, you were talking about you went to Louisiana Tech with one Terry Bradshaw. He was the first player taken in the 1970 NFL draft, and what a character.
Terry is a unique human being, and I was in school with him, had a couple of classes with him, enjoyed his displays of skill on the football field, and always, you know, Terry is just a gregarious, lovely person, I think. A lot of fun to be around.
He is, but he has acknowledged that he is bipolar.
Yes.
And yet he has had a successful life, as we know, both as a quarterback and as a pundit, and he is a character. Born around the same time as the President of the United States, as were you, and since Sunday's New York Times, as in Sunday, December 23rd, there was a remarkable front-page account of the president. It says, when President Trump grows frustrated with advisors during meetings, which is not uncommon, he sits back in his chair, crosses his arms, and scowls, "Freaking idiots," except he uses a more pungent word than freaking. For 2 years, Mr. Trump has waged war against his own government, convinced that people around him are fools, angry that they resist his wishes, uninterested in details of their briefings. He becomes especially agitated when they tell him he does not have the power to do what he wants, which makes him suspicious that they are secretly undermining him. Now the president, who once declared that I alone can fix the system, increasingly stands alone in a system that seems as broken as ever. The swirl of recent days, a government shutdown, spiraling scandals, tumbling stock markets, abrupt troop withdrawals, and the resignation of his alienated defense secretary has left the impression of a presidency at risk of spinning out of control. At the midway point in his term, Mr. Trump has grown more sure of his own judgment and more cut off from anyone else's than at any point since taking office. He spends ever more time in front of a television, often retreating to his residence out of concern that he's being watched too closely. As he sheds advisors at a head-spinning rate, he reaches out to old associates, complaining that few of the people around him were there at the beginning. What do you make of where our president is right now?
Well, certainly, we've never had a president like this before, and it's kind of, for me, of something of concern to see where we're going to go in the future in terms of his term. I certainly hope he finishes it out. I think that if we change presidents, it should be at the ballot box, not through congressional action. But Mr. Trump creates a lot of his own problems, as at least from my perspective. And he, you know, he fills a room with all of himself and pushes everything to the side, and it's his opinion or no opinion. And it's hard to run a country on that basis.
And he is a man who has been criticized mightily, and all of us on occasion face criticism, and some of us handle it differently than others.
Indeed, and it's not fun to be criticized and to be, you know, shot at symbolically by your enemies, and he's had his share of that. Some, you know, I think with justification, perhaps some not. I wish Donald Trump could be successful as the president. I'd like all people who occupy that office to be successful. But as I said, he creates a lot of his own problems, and I think the man is angry, and I don't think he likes people very much. I mean, he just runs roughshod over people.
Here's a note sent to talk at talklouisiana.org from Maxine Crump, who is head of Dialogue on Race. And speaking of criticism, Reverend Andrews, she says, for someone with Dialogue on Race Louisiana, this conversation with you and Chris Andrews is totally frustration for me. Two credible voices, two people whom I respect and call friends, two voices that have the ears of the public, and you both really need an education on racism. That's from Maxine Crump. And I wish she would call, by the way, because I'm sure that I need an education on racism and many other matters. But, Chris Andrews, it's hard to delve into that topic without offending people.
That's for sure. Maxine's a wonderful person, a dear friend, and she's done some wonderful work helping to raise, you know, sensitivity about racism. I too wish she would call. I'm not certain what she's referring to, but I applaud what she does, and I think the Dialogue on Racism is a great program. I urge everybody to be a part of that, as I have been.
Now, in the issues of our time, race is a big one, perhaps the biggest one. Jerry Brown recently, in a quote, he says, though I like the excitement of politics, I found a lot of it boring. Humdrum, nuclear war, climate change, and energy are big things. The others come and go, a little more, a little less money here or there. Climate change has catastrophic potential. The same with nuclear weapons. A lot of people say we only survived the Cuban Missile Crisis and other things through luck. Well, luck runs out. Are we in danger of getting rid of humanity as we know it by our own means?
We certainly have that power, and hopefully that will not happen ever in anybody's life. But it's a specter that we live under. You know, you and I have lived under it most of our lives. You know, the atomic bomb in the end of World War II. You know, we've had that thing around, and many, many more human beings.
Well, you're a decade older than I, and that makes us both seasoned citizens. But
right.
In the 1950s, it was an ever-present thought, wasn't it?
Always, always. And we had drills, you know, at school. We had seminars on communism and how we would fall into the hands, as Nikita Khrushchev said, like a ripe apple falling from the tree. It was frightening stuff and scary things. And the very idea that, you know, you could survive a nuclear holocaust by hovering under your desk in your schoolroom is ludicrous, but that's what we did back then.
Well, and we have more countries now with nuclear capability.
Yep.
And we have obviously some people, just look at Saudi Arabia, which does not have nuclear weapons, but what happened with the prince and chopping a man's hands off and then beheading him and then chopping up his body and then denying any responsibility for it.
Mm-hmm.
We've got some real bad actors out there in high places.
There really are. And, you know, we talk about things like a dirty bomb. We've got some radical, dangerous people in this world. And we're all vulnerable to whatever it is that they set in their minds to do.
Now, we have, as a congressional delegation, many members voting against any efforts to address climate conditions. And yet, in Louisiana, of all places, if we don't do something, we're probably going to not have a state in 100 years or so.
Yep, we'll float away and just dissolve into the sea. And, you know, stick your head in a box and pretend not to see, but it's a reality.
Why is it so difficult to acknowledge that we're, as humans, doing things that are disruptive to the planet?
I don't know. I don't know why that's so difficult. I do wish that we had politicians who had a little more backbone and didn't play to the audience, but rather looked at the facts and made decisions, hard though those may be, and politically costly though that may be. That's the kind of leadership we need.
Well, we hear that these are unusual times, and they are, but we've been through tough times before. You were born right after World War II, and our parents survived a depression and a world war and all that came after that. Are we always going to be in the midst of difficult challenges as people?
Life is turbulent, and there will always be challenges. You know, some days we're on the upside, some days we're on the downside. I started high school when John Kennedy was elected, and you remember his stern inaugural speech, "Ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country." Yep. What wonderful idealism, created the Peace Corps, said we're going to go to the moon, all of that. In a short span of, say, 1960 to 1968, we had gone through a revolution. We went from that high moment of Kennedy's inauguration to Vietnam, to civil rights, to riots in the streets in 1960, just 8 years. So it's a turbulent world that we're living in.
And in a decade, we got a man to the moon and back. Mm-hmm. And Kennedy, of course, made that his stated goal in his inaugural address. And he only was president for 2 years, 10 months, and 2 days. And yet he left an amazing mark, and I'm sure you remember the day he was killed.
I remember it well. I was in high school, and remember it very well.
Where were you in high school?
I was in chemistry class. And
at which school?
Great Opelousas High, OHS.
And what was the reaction?
Well, we're shocked, and I remember my mother worked for the city of Opelousas. My father had died. And I was just absolutely determined that I had to get to the office to call and let her know that the president had been shot. The very idea that she did not know working there in the city hall never occurred to me. I just had to get the news to her, and I ran to the office and used a telephone, and, of course, she knew about it.
November 22nd, 1963. To put things in perspective, next year will mark the same distance between the movie JFK and the present as it was between the assassination and the movie, and we still are talking about it all these 55 years later. Chris Andrews, Happy New Year to you. Always a pleasure. God bless you.
Happy New Year, Jim.